Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, as ever, Stuart Butler, joined, as ever, with Adam Stoker.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here again.
Well, Adam, it's just the two of us today again, but this is a topic that I think is certainly one I'm passionate about, but also one that I think we need to talk about more in the industry. And it's one that's inspired by, I've been working on a presentation for a conference I'm going to next week in San Francisco. It's Travelability Summit. And I've been there last couple of years, and you know, it's run by an amazing organization, Travelability, headed up by Jake Steinman, who I'm sure most people in the industry know. And they're doing so much good in the industry related to accessibility. And it really inspired me to want to talk about that subject on the show, because I think there's a lot of really good things happening in our industry. But I also think there's a lot of opportunity. So does that sound like a fun little ride for everyone that's watching and listening?
Sounds great to me. I feel like I am working a little from behind here, because I think my eyes have been opened to the importance of accessible travel over the last few years. And so I'm playing catch up a little bit. It's going to be good for me to have this conversation today as well.
Well, I think, to be fair, I think a lot of the industry is playing catch up. You know, I think this is a subject that is sort of bounced around in the periphery for a long time, but it's rapidly taking center stage as it should. And so I think before I jump into it, I think it's important. I'm going to open up a little bit. You know how podcasts are meant to be a little more vulnerable, and you're meant to get to know the person, the hosts, and the people that are talking to, right? It's a very intimate medium.
Am I going to get to know you right now?
You're
going
to get to know me a little deeper than perhaps you do now, and most people do. I don't open up about this. It's not something I'm not embarrassed or ashamed of. It's just not something that is particularly relevant in most conversations. And so, but I'm considered disabled, right? I don't think of myself as disabled per se, but I mean, technically speaking, I am. I'm extremely visually impaired. That's why I struggle to look at the camera. It's why when I see someone or don't see someone at a conference and ignore them, people sometimes think I'm arrogant. And it's like, no, I literally didn't recognize you because I have cone dystrophy. I can't see. I have zero central vision. Like when I look at you right now, and this is a blessing that came with this disability, but when I look at you, Adam, right now, your face is a blur, you know? And so thank goodness it's a blur, but you know, it's hard for me to recognize people out of context. Like if I'm sitting in a meeting, contextually, I know where they are. If I'm on a Zoom call like this, actually, I'm joking. I can see your face because I can zoom in on a computer. But you know, I don't let my disability limit what I can do, and that really it comes back to my mom. When I was growing up, a lot of the doctors, they knew I had severe myopia. They weren't sure about the cone dystrophy stuff, but I couldn't see very well, and they told me things like, "Well, he's not going to be able to play soccer on the school soccer team." And my mom was like, "No, you're not going to put arbitrary limits on him." And so not only did she encourage me to go and play soccer, but I ended up being the goalkeeper for my primary school team and the captain. First, and to my knowledge, only ever captain goalkeeper of the primary school team. And so she always was the advocate for me. And she always told me not to use my disability as an excuse and to figure out a way around the problem. You know, and I think in some ways that's what shaped me to be a problem solver and to look laterally at problems and to think about everything, every obstacle that's in front of you as just a problem that hasn't been solved yet. And so,
can I ask you a question real quick on that?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, to go from being told you can't play soccer to being the goalkeeper, it seems like being the goalkeeper is a role that requires visual ability. And so, tell me a little bit about how did you become a good goalkeeper when your primary strength wasn't your ability to see what's coming?
Well, so I don't know if you've realized this about me or not, Adam, but I tend to be a little bit of a challenger and a little disagreeable. So if you're familiar with the Enneagram personality test, like I am a hard 8 as a challenger, right? I don't accept the status quo Always going to
See,
zig
I
when
thought
people
you were on the
sag.
attractiveness scale saying you're a hard eight, and I was like,
I'm a hard
whoa,
eight,
that's aggressive.
like a hard three, four. But you know, I think it was inevitable because when people said, "Oh, you can't play soccer," then it's like, "Well, what is the most challenging position for me to achieve?" And it's like, "Oh, let's shoot for the moon. Let's go for goalkeeper." I was a decent goalkeeper. I mean, wasn't world class. As I got older, I moved to outfield positions because it did become difficult for me as the level of competition increased and the speed at which the ball was coming to me increased. I definitely had to adjust, right? I could still play soccer, but I became a defender or a midfielder instead of a goalkeeper. And, you know, I'm not saying I was ever like playing at a high level, but it's just an illustration. You know, to me, the only thing I physically can't do right now is drive. Like I'm legally not allowed to drive, and that's fine because when I think about why do we drive, right? There's a freedom to that, and I'll be honest, I had a really hard time when I had to give up my license because I could drive for a little while and then my acuity dropped. But I can get places, right? There's things called Uber and taxis and legs that I have the ability to use, and so I use, right? I walk a lot. I actually run a lot. It's not always safe for me to run because sometimes I trip up on roots of trees like I did this weekend and bust my shoulder up. But I think a lot of people with disabilities find a way to be resilient, right? They find a way around. And I tell this story not to be self-indulgent, but to set this conversation up because what I want to illustrate to people is that everyone's lived experience is different. And when we treat accessibility as a homogenous thing, we're letting a lot of things fall through the gaps, right? And even if people go that extra mile, so instead of just saying, I'm going to tackle accessibility, if I say, well, I'm going to tackle a specific dimension of accessibility, let's say mobility, right? People that are wheelchair users. Not all people that use a wheelchair have the same needs or desires, right? Or challenges. And so things like, and this is something that travelability has really opened my eyes to, is things like the heights of the bed really matter. And some people need a lower bed, some people need a higher bed. They actually came out with a campaign recently, which I thought was very funny, and it was called Inches Matter, which is kind of a fun thing to say, right? But it really does matter. Like the height of the bed matters. And so documenting that as a DMO is really important. So I say all that to sort of set up this conversation before I jump into the topic in a real meaningful way and talk about an observation I had. I want to do the greatest segment in all of hospitality marketing. Do you know what it is, Adam?
I do. I do, and I can't wait. I was worried you were going to skip it today, and I didn't feel like that was appropriate. So yes, Stu's News is a
Let's
staple
go.
that needs to stay. Let's do it.
It's time, everyone, for Stu's News. Jingle to be determined. You still haven't got enough
Well,
votes on that,
so
right?
I've
You're up to
asked you
30
for that
something, I saw.
clip because there's more
Yeah.
engagement on video clips, and so I've asked you for
Okay.
the clip. You have not sent the clip over, and I believe it's intentional.
Yeah, I'm filibustering a little bit. I'll send it over. But we will eventually, I'm sure, have a jingle. It may not be that one, but we will. But let's talk about Stu's News. And this one was deliberately inserted in this topic. We're talking about accessibility today. I wanted to make an announcement, and it's one that I am super excited about. We've talked about traveling the spectrum on the show a tremendous amount. We've talked about it publicly in sessions at conferences. This is a show, TV show that Visit Myrtle Beach developed. We are a sensory-friendly destination. We brought three families to the Myrtle Beach area. We documented the good, the bad, and the meltdowns. We've talked about it in previous episodes. We've been looking for a home for this show for what feels like forever. It's re in real reality, it's about 18 months. But we can now announce that Traveling the Spectrum is coming to Peacock streaming later this year. How cool is that?
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
And congrats, because I know what an in-depth personal crusade this has been. And I know your team has done an incredible job to support you and work together. This is not a one-person effort, but I do know how important it is to you individually, and it's so fun to see it actually come to fruition.
Yeah, it has been a labor of love for all the whole team, and it's one that we didn't know we could pull off. You know, we started on this journey when I joined the DMO, not knowing if we could even. We posed the question, "Can we make TV shows?" And we started sort of with a layup with a cooking show, and we put that on the Cooking Channel, and it was, very successful. 40 episodes later, it's done phenomenal things for the perception of the culinary scene in Long Beach, and we wanted to take that to the next level because, full disclosure, that was a paid placement. Like, we didn't Cooking Channel, we paid them to put quote unquote propaganda on their channel, right? It was essentially a media buy in disguise as branded entertainment. This is the first time that we're not paying to distribute this content. Someone else is actually contributing back to us to distribute this, and we're going to have a massive audience. Like, millions and millions of people have subscribed to Peacock, and we're just starting there. We're looking at international distribution. We're looking at distribution beyond Peacock too. But we wanted to do it this way. We thought it deserved this kind of a platform because this story deserves to be heard. You know, people have seen slivers of what autism is, right? What people with autism have to deal with, but it's sort of it's one segment, and so we wanted to show a broader segment. We wanted to bring in the families and show the impact. We wanted to show the different types of people that are on the autism spectrum, and we wanted to normalize it, and that's something that really hasn't been done. We want to start with autism, but we want to move into other disabilities. But I am super psyched. Hopefully by the time this episode drops, it will actually be on Peacock. We can't announce the date quite yet,
Yeah.
the day we're recording this, but we're planning to launch that later on this year. And so if you're interested in checking out that show, travelingthespectrumshow.com is the site where it's got all the information. You can follow the socials, but go check out Peacock and watch the show and share it with your friends. And we're just getting started. It's going to be a phenomenal movement. So we're
Yeah.
excited. That's
The
Stu's
story
news.
is, I think it's important as we talk about this project to maybe call back to some of the previous episodes that we've done. We had Will Seckham on to talk about why DMOs don't take risks, right? And we actually had Sarah Peters come on, and she asked the question, are destinations getting the strategy right but the tactics wrong? And in some of those conversations, I think what we've really tried to attack, and part of the purpose for the show of the Destination Discourse, we've tried to attack the status quo in the destination marketing industry. And your team started with the question, can we do a TV show? And if you hadn't asked that question originally, even though for the most part, destinations haven't historically done TV shows, and some have, I know, but you guys asked that question, and by asking that question and pursuing the answer, you got to ask a deeper question, which is, can a destination create a TV show that actually gets a paid placement and is not something that we have to pay kind of this veiled ad spend to be able to put it on the Cooking Channel, but can we actually get a paid placement from Peacock? And so there, well, from a streaming platform, but as I hear this, if we don't challenge the status quo on the front end, we never get to some of these big wins. And I really feel like your team, as much as any team that I've seen in the destination marketing industry, is not only willing to ask those questions, and I honestly think it may tie back to some of the stuff that you dealt with as a child, because you were told you couldn't play soccer. You asked why, you challenged it, you became a goalkeeper. And we're seeing that same experience now professionally. Well, why can't we create a TV show that actually gets paid placement? And now we've accomplished that. It's going to be pretty incredible to see, okay, now as we level up that question again, what's the next thing we can do? None of that happens if you don't challenge the status quo from the get-go, and the industry as a whole has got to do that more.
Yeah, and it reminds me of you're familiar with Kevin Smith, the filmmaker. He did like Clerks and a lot of those kind of movies in the early 90s, early 2000s, and Jay and Silent Bob, those characters. He has a speech that he gave, and he talks about it was after his dad passed away and how horrific that is, but the message is we need more people in our lives to ask why not. We have a lot of people in our lives that ask the question, well, why? Why would you do that? Why are you doing that? Like, why would that help us, right? There's a lot of people questioning why. But this goes back to our last episode, the election one, where we talked about being in an echo chamber and needing people around you that challenge the status quo and challenge your thinking. You need people that are supporters of you, that are cheerleaders for you, that when you come up with a crazy idea, they say, why not? Why not us? Someone's got to do it, right? That's someone's got to be the first to go to Mars, right? Elon's asking that question. Why not? You know, and so you need people in your life to ask why not more than you have people to ask why.
And asking why not gives you a path to be so much more proud of the work that you do than if you just stay within the perceived boundaries that you started with when you entered the industry. And so it's so much more rewarding to ask why not and to push against those boundaries. And I'm really excited to see your team have that experience.
Well, thank you, man. It's been a long time coming, but we're super, super proud and excited. And most importantly, I think we're proud of how it's going to change lives. The 87% of families that don't take family vacations because they have a loved one on the spectrum, 93% of those say they would if there were better accommodations. And we're showing that it is possible through this show. So let's move away from us specifically, although not completely. Because I want to talk about a profound change in my mindset in how I'm thinking differently about accessibility than I was. I think we've done a decent job as a destination in Myrtle Beach around sensory friendly. We haven't done a particularly great job yet on other dimensions of disabilities, although it's part of our strategic plan and we're going to commit to it. And I think one of the problems is how accessibility is framed in how it's thought of. Like a lot of DMOs don't have a dedicated resource to tackle accessibility. They don't really look at it as an opportunity for growth in the market, in community bonding, and all the positive stuff. They look at it as accommodations and compliance, right? They look at it as, you know, I come from the hotel space, and a lot of folks will say, well, I need an ADA compliant website because otherwise I'll get sued. And we'll be like, well, I mean, that is true, but you also need an ADA compliant or WCAG 2.1 AA at the time compliant website because it's the right thing to do. And there's a business opportunity, right? And so I think just changing our mindset. And so if you'll indulge me for a sec, I feel like I'm talking a lot on this episode more than normal, but I want to talk to you about an experience I had a couple of weeks ago. So we're actually shooting Breaking News, season two of Traveling the Spectrum. And I got to sit down with the mom of one of the cast members of season two. And she was a lady that when we talked to her earlier on, you could feel her pain and her despair. And it looks like Jake's joining us. How about that? We
Jake's
asked Jake
popping
if he was
in.
available to join on this episode, but what perfect timing, Jake Steinman, everybody. How are you, Jake? Oh, do we have audio on Jake? No.
Jake, great to
Yes,
see
how
you.
are you? Jake, we are in the middle of recording. You can jump right in. We are talking about accessibility. We're talking about the things that DMOs can do better. And so I'm going to ask you a question in a second, but before I'm going to tell a little story if you can indulge me for a sec. Is that all right, Jake?
That's all right.
Okay, so we were recording Traveling the Spectrum season two, and one of the parents who we talked to before she came on the trip was talking to us about how she felt so lonely. She was a mom that was a full-time caretaker. The burden primarily fell on her. Her husband was out working a lot, and she just felt like a prisoner. And she felt like there was no hope for her or her son. The situation was permanent. It wasn't going to change, and this was her life. And it was despair is one of the words that came to mind when we were talking to her. And then we brought her and her family to Myrtle Beach, and they had 4 or 5 days here where they got to behave like quote unquote typical people. And they learned so much about themselves. And I sat down with the whole family at a breakfast table on the fourth or fifth day. And the person sitting across from me was a completely different person. You could see the burden was off her shoulders. You could see that she felt for the first time in a very long time, there was hope. And she felt like there were people out there that cared enough about her and her son that they were going there was going to be a different outcome than she had perhaps even considered before. And that's the power of travel. Travel will bring new opportunities to you. It will show you growth. And every single family that we brought here with Traveling the Spectrum has shown that considerable growth. And she said something to me. This is the profound thing she said to me. She said, "I've been places where people have accommodated my son. I've been places where they've maybe even accepted my son, but I've never been anywhere with him where he was celebrated for who he is. His differences weren't something that made him other. They were part of who he was. And we're all more different than we are similar, but we're also all more similar than we are different. And so if we can change our approach as an industry from one of accommodations to celebration of people, individuals, I think we're going to move a lot faster when it comes to accessibility. So I'm going to pause there and I'm going to let Jake tell the audience that's listening a little bit about who he is and why he is an authority on accessibility in the travel industry.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, and I'm flattered that you feel I'm an authority. But just the but it's really by osmosis, and it's not by the lived experience. And so I've been so I started Travelability 5 years ago, and what I've learned, and I wanted to bring this up to you, is that we started to focus on. The ADA law. I tried to understand it because the travel industry is really, is really very unaware of, around accessibility. And so I went back and looked at the ADA law, and then I saw that it was written in 1990, and it took a year and a half to pass because of the advocacy groups came in and during the comment period and said, this law is not going to work for us. And then the business community, the hotel industry, the construction industry, the restaurant industry came in and said, it's going to put us out of business. So it was written for the median, and which means that it works for half the people and it doesn't work for the other half. And autism is not the only disability that has a spectrum. And as a matter of fact, autism isn't even part of the ADA. Sensory is not part of the ADA. And so what happens is there's no information on these websites about what's accessible. And so because there's no ADA for information, people with disabilities. They go to a hotel or they go to an attraction or they go to a beach or whatever it is, they don't know which half they're in until they get there. And then it doesn't work for them. So our mission is really to work with destinations like Myrtle Beach, like you, that have the relationships with the stakeholders. And the relationships with the restaurants and with the hotels and with their communities, with their city managers, and to help them scale. So this is a way we can scale accessibility on, at a grassroots level by helping them put the information up on their on these landing pages and helping them educate their attractions and hotels to have information on those landing pages so that people know what they're going to get before they get there, before they arrive. So that's how we started. And Stuart, you've been very you've helped me a lot in terms of educating me about the approaches that you're using. You have a disability yourself. And so you have the lived experience. And so what I've had over the last 5 years is I've been working with a lot of people who are disabled, that are disabled bloggers, or they're like thought leaders in the travel space. And I've learned sort of what they need. And I bring them to the conference. So we have an annual conference that consists of really disabled speakers who are there to educate the attendees as to what they need. And then it's destinations and hotels or attractions, but the travel industry to learn from the people with the lived experience. And then the third component is really the you know, the sort of the organized, the nonprofit organizations, like the, you know, we've got this year, you know, TSA coming, the, you know, government organizations, U.S. The U.S. Department of Commerce, the Travel Association, they're all looking to see what they need to do, and because we have the only conference that deals with this.
Yeah, so let me kind of jump in there a little bit, Jake, because I think you know, one of the things that we struggle with, and I think most of my peers in the industry struggle is with, is it feels overwhelming, right? It feels like this massive elephant that we've got to eat, and we don't really know how to get started. We don't really know where our priorities should be. We're also kind of awkwardly approaching it because we don't want to be insensitive, right? We want to use the right wording, right? We want to understand how people want to be referred to. Don't want to offend anyone in this pursuit of improving the experience. And so it is overwhelming. So I've really appreciated your organization sort of breaking it down into certain bite-sized pieces that we can do, like the accessibility playbook that Travelability provides and is now available for DI is a phenomenal first read. Like, yeah, I think that would be something I would encourage every DMO to at least get their hands on. To, I think you can buy that or license that through DI now. Is that right, Jake? The Travelability Disability Playbook. But what would you say where should someone start if they want to commit to accessibility in their destination? What's the starting point?
Okay, so the starting point is really is two things. A, it's bandwidth and budget. Those are the two areas that really people have to look at. And then the other area to start with is what assets you have that you may not, that you can start with that are already there that you can sort of get behind. And so, you know, for example, some, you know, you're starting with autism. You started with autism because you've got a training, you know, operation there already in place that has started with, you know, that has already trained a lot of, so that's a place to start. But in the end, it's really, what you have to look at is from a DMO perspective is really what you can control and what you can influence and those two things. And then, so I'm going to just tell you, I was in Nashville for a wedding and I met with the DMO there. And I'm just going to tell you what I encountered there because I think she was very typical. And she is the senior vice president of communications. And I asked her how she got into this. And she said, well, my parents are 85 and you know, we're experiencing problems. So she's living through the travel experience with older parents. And then, and so this is how she, you know, this is why she basically, so she told me that the CEO told me about this summit and she said, you should go to this. And because it's part, she sees it as part of marketing. And then the other person, and I ask her who else is involved. And the other person that's involved there is the head of sales, convention sales, and she has MS. And just the, you know, and then the third person that's involved is the person in charge of membership and partnerships. And just the, so, you know, that is sort of in training. And so the real issue is, and I said, the real issue, you have these three people, and I think this is typical in DMO organizations, is you have three people that are focused in their area. So one is around meetings, one is around communication, one is around training, memberships, but none of them have a budget. You know, so then how do you coordinate? So the issue is, you know, A, the first thing is to get a landing page up. So the number one thing to do is to do a survey of your industry, of your hotels, of your attractions, and determine what features they have. And so that survey, so if you have, say you have 500 members that receive that survey, you might get 30 that will return it.
Yeah, if you're lucky, yeah.
If you're lucky. Okay, so this is what you need to expect. And you start with that 30 and you put the landing page up, and then you send that landing page to the other 470 and say, this is where we're starting, and it just sort of iterates. So that's with some place people could start. The other thing that I think is really intimidating is they look at it and they see, okay, so we have this landing page and it's all wheelchair oriented. How do we, the other thing is really that there are other, wheelchairs require ramps and construction projects. Showers aren't working properly, there's certain things. Anyway, but you can start with hearing, you can start with blindness. There are apps you can have. But I think the best place, I think the most interesting place to start is with sensory tourism.
Yeah. And that seems to be the trend, right? I think it's a lot of folks have sort of seen folks like Mesa have done a good job, and obviously Mola Beach has been committed to it for a while, and it's beginning to become contagious, right? We're seeing more and more destinations tackle the sensory side of things because, from an infrastructure perspective, it's one of the easiest or the less difficult, I should say. It's not easy, but the less difficult to begin the journey. But I think it almost doesn't matter, right? I think you've got to decide that you're committed. You touched on two things that I think are really important. One is you've got to have resources. You've got to take this seriously. Like, we all have a finite amount of time and budget. You've got to decide how much of that you're going to allocate to these initiatives. And if you don't, then you may as well not even try, because it's just not going to get off the ground. This takes a heavy lift. And so you have to have people and money dedicated to these initiatives. That's number one. Number two, and this we were very fortunate, but we've learned really the hard way in other ways, is you have to engage the community you're trying to serve. You have to. As a DMO, we're not experts, right? We don't understand the lived experience of people with visual impairment or hearing impairment or neurodiversity or mobility challenges. We don't. So you've got to go find those people in your community or on a national level that really have that deep knowledge, those experiences. And then you've got to go find, work with them to go find the customer that you're really trying to talk to. And really, I ultimately understand what the needs are. Right, because we can prescribe solutions that we think are the right things, and it might be that, oh, I understand that people in a wheelchair need a higher bed, right? And so I put all higher beds in my hotel, and then it turns out, well, no, some people with certain types of wheelchair need a higher bed, but some need a lower bed, and so we got to start treating people like individuals and people like people, not based on their disability or their label, but they're a person who has this. Like, I'm a person who has a visual impairment. I'm not a visually impaired person. And not that the words particularly matter to me, but the semantics, the meaning of those words are important. I'm a person first because I have a lot of unique attributes that are different than someone else that has the same disability as me. And so we've got to stop using the same homogenous brush when we're talking to people with disabilities. And I don't know, Jake, do you agree with that? Disagree with that? This is destination discourse, so you are allowed to disagree.
I disagree to the extent that people with disabilities that I've encountered disagree with it. So I'm talking
some
about
do, right?
How
and
they
want
to be referred to. Okay. So some of them want to be like, we recommend that it's person first. That's what we recommend. But a lot of them feel their disability is their identity.
Yeah.
You know, they feel
right.
There's nothing,
some do, some
there's
don't,
nothing
right? So we kind of
to
see.
Be ashamed
right.
of about being disabled. And so it's a debate within the disability community that has existed for a long time. And
Yeah.
so either
You're
one is
correct. We
fine.
see that in the autism community a lot. Like there are, and it's probably split 50-50 within autism, right? It's some people prefer the person first language, and that's probably the way to start because it's a little more generous, right? But then you're right. Some people individually have a preference, and you should respect that, right? If someone wants to be called autistic and not a person with autism, you should absolutely try your best to be, you know, cordial and respect that. And but you sort of reiterate by disagreeing with me, you reiterated my point, right? Which is everyone is an individual and everyone's lived experience is different. And we can't make homogenous assumptions about anyone because of the disability they have. Even if they choose to make that their identity, right? That doesn't mean that the next person that's a wheelchair user does the same. So we've got to treat people
I
like
think,
people.
yeah. So I, the thing is, it's like one size fits one. That's really
Yeah.
what it is, and that's
Oh,
what
I'm
makes
so
it
totally
so.
stealing that. That's good.
Just see, so that is really why it's so intimidating to people, and that's why the information is so important. Because if you're talking about beds, let's just take bed height that you just brought up. Having the high bed. Having high beds, that works for some people in power wheelchairs need that.
Right.
And
Yep.
then people in a, so it's really, like this is why I work with and recommend Wheel the World so much, because they're going in measuring those beds and they're measuring things and putting this information up on the DMOs can use that information on their website. And it provides the granular detailed information that people really need from hotels, and just the which are the main stumbling blocks. And so I think the other thing is, if I had to look at describing the four disabilities that we cover with one word, so what I would like for mobility for wheelchair users, it's stairs and steps. For hearing, it's communication. For blind, it's navigation. And for autism, it's acceptance. And for everybody, it's independence. That's all, what they're looking for is really independence. And that's what we all want. And so by putting information, I'm basically an obsessed advocate for information providing,
Yeah.
for DMOs
I
providing the information. And so the other thing they look at is really, and this is what I recommend, is they look at accessibility and just, they think, oh, can we tackle all this at once? And so really what they should do is, like for you started out with autism, and then you branched out into mobility by survey, say hypothetically. And then the second year, and then the third year, you focus on hearing, and deafness, and you put in hearing, you put in hearing loops in different venues in the location. And the fourth year, you focus on sensory tourism. And suddenly, you're familiar with the tech stack, right? Just the that we have to build a website. Suddenly, you have an accessibility stack, and that's the best way, because it just breaks it down into, it's not too intimidating, and then you can work with local disability organizations to concentrate on something for a year on that. And that's what that's what people are doing. I think the thing. What I wanted to ask you is, because you're a DMO, and from Myrtle Beach, and you've worked with
Oh,
DMOs.
we didn't sign up to let the guests ask questions. Totally understand.
Hey,
Oh, go ahead.
well, Stuart, my philosophy is we learn from each other.
This is
So
true.
just the one of the things that I looked at is really, if I were running a DMO, how would I budget for this? Say each department has some, those three departments, they each have their own budget. So what I would look at is really, taking some percentage of each of their budgets and putting it into a pool that benefits them all. And the pool, should it be 10,000, something that they'd have to work with,
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think the money part is important, but I think just as important because a lot of this stuff doesn't have to cost a lot of money, right? It's time is
Yeah, it
the
doesn't.
limiting resource, right? And so I think yes, you should allocate budget, and I think a lot of DMOs started to allocate a portion of their budget to DEI initiatives. I think at least a section of that, if not a dedicated resource, should be specifically accessibility. So I think the money is important, but I think more importantly, you got to have the people, right? Or a person in-house that is quarterbacking this, that is the sort of the champion for it, that is bringing it to the top of the conversation in everything you do, because it should permeate everything you do, right? It shouldn't be an afterthought. It shouldn't be pushed out to one side. It should be a continual conversation that happens. But the other thing that the DMOs need to realize, we tend to do things in isolation. We tend to sort of take the burden on ourselves and our own team or our agencies, especially if we're a small agency or a small DMO. But the community that is out there already that probably exists in your area have a lot of opportunity to be additive to what you're trying to do. And so if you just engage with those communities and ask them questions like, how can we help? What are you already doing we could promote? That costs no one anything, right? I can put events on an event calendar. Who do you need to talk to? How can we help connect you? How can we help develop goals and strategies that are going to elevate our destination from this dimension of disability, right? And so what you'll find, what we've done with the autism and sensory-friendly stuff is it really has taken a village. It's not just the DMO, and it's really, we're sort of the mouthpiece for it at times, but we're certainly not the majority of the work. People like Becky Lodge with Champion Autism Network, people like SOS Care, people like the airport, people like the hotels and the restaurants and the attractions. They've done the hard work. Like, we're just sort of the storyteller for all of that. And so I think the DMO needs to understand they're not in this fight alone. And if we go back to a previous episode of this show where we talked about with Amir Elon that the local community quality of life is the primary purpose of a DMO, then what better way to improve your community than to be accessible to everyone? And not just accessible, but to create experiences that make everyone feel independent and included. Because that's what we're all trying to do,
Yeah.
regardless of anyone's ability or disability. If we can make them independent and included, then we're going to have a higher quality of life, and that's the business that we're in as a DMO.
And I'm definitely not as in accessible travel as both of you have been. Jake, obviously you're very deep in it, but I will come in with an observation of what I've seen over the last several years. I've seen a real kind of increase in focus on inclusion, and yet I feel like accessibility has been somewhat deprioritized within that umbrella of inclusion. And I think it may be the most actionable part of inclusion that you can do is to make your destination more accessible and then communicate to people that might have different disabilities what you've done to make it more accessible. And so I would love to see the industry focus from an inclusion perspective on raising disabilities as a higher priority, accessibility as a higher priority as we're talking about inclusion.
Yeah,
So,
I couldn't agree more.
yeah, so I
Yeah.
think that is happening. I think there's this DEI fatigue that has taken hold, and they're looking for, and as well, I mean it. And this is, I think, one of the reasons that DEI has sort of evolved into a social inclusion. Their EDI program has evolved into social inclusion, is because it's politicized in different destinations, and just the the diversity side, which is around racial equity, that's politicized in certain destinations. LGBT is politicized in certain destinations. We see it happening all the time. But the thing that isn't politicized, the safe space, is accessibility. And this is something that's bipartisan, where they can all come together. That's what we found. And just the so and then when you brought up the resident lo the the resident community, that's the unintended positive consequences for accessibility, being accessible for visitors, is suddenly you're accessible for residents, and you can and your website with all that information could include, you know, one way to iterate it is you include information there about the city, what the city's done. They may have accessible trails that they're, you know, they're out, their parks and recs department have created. You can include other things that, and suddenly, you know, nobody goes to the city website to do anything other than pay a parking ticket. And so just the, so your website will be the sort of the hub of accessibility information for the resident community, as well as the as well as for the visitors. And then there's, you know, statistically, if it's 15% of, well, you know, the Longwoods did a study last year for 2023, and one of the questions they asked was, in the past 12 months, has anyone in your travel party required accessibility services? And nationally, the number was 17%. Okay, so just the, so if there's 17%, that may be 17% of the local residents have that, or they have some relative that wants to visit them for the summer vacation or Christmas or Thanksgiving, and they can't put them up because they don't have the features and they need, and they need to put them up in the hotel. And suddenly they've got, you know, here are the hotels they can put them up at from your website. So I see the DMOs, because of, you know, where they're positioned, you know, with the sort of the relationships they've built with their community, with their stakeholders, and with their restaurants and with other things, they can be the hub of information for all of this and the resources that people need. And then you have basically value to the board members, the you know, elected officials, you know, city council members. They see that this is, you know, oh, you're helping everybody here, and that way and I'll tell you, one of the things that we're looking at for the playbook, you know, I went to the DI Social Inclusion Summit, and I had somebody, I printed out the playbook, and I had somebody look at it, and then I asked her, I said, what were your thoughts? And she said, we could really use this, but I would share this with our city, because they can really use this information that's in the playbook. And just the, you know, for, because it has how to create trails, how to do, you know, it's really has a lot of information that they can use. And then suddenly you have relationships with, you're benefiting all those departments that may not even know about some of these things. And so just the, so I see the DMO, we want, our goal is to make them the hub of accessibility information.
And it's a good role for us to play, but I think you bring up a really relevant point, which is you can't do it on your own, because a lot of DMOs don't control the product, and the product is so important in the experience. And so you've got to involve your municipality and local attractions and other things like that. I mean, it's critical. And then the final thing I'll say, because we talked a lot about getting started, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? You're never done. I think the one thing we've learned is, as much work as we've done for the last almost decade on sensory-friendly travel, is we're just scratching the surface. And every interaction we have with every individual, we're learning something that we can do better tomorrow than we did today. And that, in a lot of ways, that's the heart of this show, is how do we do better than we did better tomorrow than we did today. And I think in accessibility and progress, driving progress in your destination around accessibility, and the celebration of people with differences, I think we've all got to take that long-term mindset, because small accommodations, small modifications add up accumulatively over time. And when you've been doing things for 8 years or 9 years, like we have with autism, suddenly all of a sudden now we have a product, right? But the year one, year two, it was rough, right? We did some things and it was good, but it could have been better. And so every year you've got to continue. So this isn't a checklist, which is how some DMOs approach this. They'll get a couple of people certified and then they say, oh, we're accessible. No, this is an ongoing process where you have to continue progress every single day and continue to be better tomorrow than you were today. So we are running short on time. Adam, do you have any final thoughts before we sign off, and then I'll let Jake give us some final thoughts.
No, I appreciate learning from both of you on this topic. It's something that I don't feel near as maybe well versed in as you two do. So it's been interesting to listen to you. But I will say I would encourage any destination that might be listening, prioritize this and get started. I mean, I believe that we're going to see more and more demand for accessible travel experiences. And we're either going to be ready when that demand increases or we're not. And my suggestion would be to be ready.
Yeah, we have an
So,
increasing number of people with disabilities, and that number is not going to go down. And you have to be accommodating. We have a phrase here that the beach is for everybody, and that means literally everybody, every ability, every belief. And so, if we're going to be the most welcoming destination, we have to be inclusive of everyone, especially people with disabilities who have the hardest time traveling.
and I'll throw out the baby boomers are the largest generation, just from a
Yeah.
volume perspective. They're not getting younger and healthier. So
No,
there's going to be
mobility isn't
more and
about,
more.
yeah, right. Mobility isn't just about people in wheelchairs, right? It's about people that have problems moving around. Steps are very challenging for folks that have a hard time walking around. So, Jake, I'm going to give you the final thought, any final advice, and then you can shamelessly plug how people can get involved with travelability and find the destination playbook for accessibility playbook.
So one of the things that I wanted to bring up is that accessibility is like a race without a finish line, but it happens to be a race with a lot of starting lines, and that we went into. And just see, so that's one thing. What I'm seeing when you're talking about baby boomers is that one, so they are empty nester couples who have grandkids. And that they want to focus on. So they travel a lot to visit their grandkids. And this is a very typical scenario. And then one of them has aged into a quote unquote condition that makes the other one the caregiver during the travel experience. And so the caregiver is the person, so that say it's a, the husband is suddenly in a wheelchair, it's just starts with a walker, starts with a cane, a walker, then progresses to a wheelchair because it's just so much easier than and faster to get around. And she's pushing the wheelchair. And so his wife is pushing the wheelchair. And this is a scenario that I wanted to add the insight is really the question is, how do we make her job easier, feel like less of more of a vacation and less like work when they're on vacation? Because she's pushing that wheelchair and she's doing all that. So what we're focusing on, so we're going to do at the conference is we're going to have a whole panel on with caregivers, with the people who are actually traveling, and they're the ones that are doing the booking, they're doing the research, they're doing the troubleshooting, when things go awry. And we're trying to figure out the key is to bookings is they're making the bookings. And just see is how to make their jobs easier. And I think that's really something that we're going to focus on with the information side. And that involves, things like adding wheelchair rentals, to your accessible landing pages, adult daycare. So that they can have a break. These are all things that we're learning. And so we have the people that are interested, they could just go to our website. All of our research sources are there. Our conference is completely sold out. So we don't, we have 216 people this year.
Great.
So
Yeah.
from 150 last year. So, and then from like 110 the year before that. So we're just sort of growing the right way. We're not growing, not doubling and tripling, which we couldn't handle, but we're growing slowly and reflecting the way travel is accessible travel has grown. And just
Yeah.
we're a reflection of that. And so
And that's one of the
anyway,
things I
I
love about the organization, Jake, is you really listen to the people. You bring in new fresh ideas and new people constantly to the organization. And I've been privileged to sit on your advisory board for a couple of years now, and I've been to the conferences, and I'm always learning every interaction I have because there's always some fresh perspective, fresh information that's coming in. So I would strongly encourage everyone that's in the DMO world, on the vendor side and on the DMO side, or as the dark side and the light side, as I like to call it, I would advise all of them to get involved. Firstly, to download the accessibility playbook, right, which you can get through Destinations International. Is that correct, Jake? So just go to the Destinations International website, and is it on the homepage, or you
They
search
can,
for it, or they can.
yeah, you
Or
have
we,
to pay.
yeah.
It's there's a cost, there's a cost for based on your budget.
Yeah.
So there's and it's fairly costly because we don't want somebody to just check the box and have that
You're a
sit there
terrible
doing
salesman
nothing,
right now, Jake. Terrible
huh?
salesman. It's tremendous value, right? It's tremendous value. The amount of knowledge,
No,
I mean, it's
I am
hundreds
a
of
terrible
thousands of,
salesman. You're right.
yeah. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars of knowledge in that book, right? You boiled that down over like several years and had some of the best experts in the industry put this thing together. So the value is tremendous. I mean, it's not inexpensive for sure, but it's worth every penny. So I'd say that.
Well,
If they want to learn more about travelability in the summit, though, where can they do that, Jake?
Just www.travelability.net.
Okay.
It's on the website. But I will say I had a friend of mine from McKinsey look at the book, and he told me that he said if we were to do this project, we'd have to charge almost $1 million.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Over
So
it would,
it's a bargain. It's value.
it's the
I'm gonna
deal.
coach you up on how to pitch it next time, Jake.
Yeah, come on. We got to put that sales hat on, Jake.
That's right.
Yeah, this the you know so I you know I'm not a great salesman. It's just the so
Well, thank you for being on the
anyway
show
I
today,
want to
Jake.
apologize. I had an emergency. Just the that I want to apologize with my dog. So just the
Understood. We're
okay.
glad you
So
could
just
join us
the
today.
so
It's not a
anyway.
problem. So for those wondering why Jake jumped in halfway through, there you go. But we just appreciate you spending some time with us educating the destination world. We'd love to have you back on the show at a later date. I would love to hear from you what you think some folks are getting right and what some folks are getting wrong. But we'll save that for another episode. But Adam, if they want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Adam at relicagency.com or find me on LinkedIn, Adam Stoker.
Jake, you want to give out an email address, or just should they go to
It's
travelability.net?
Jake at travelability.net. They can find me
Okay,
there. Okay.
great. And you can find me at stuart.butler@visitmortalbeach.com, or you can look me up on LinkedIn. I've been pretty active posting there recently, so go check that out. And then please, this is both a video and an audio podcast now, so please, whichever platform you're consuming this show on, please subscribe, leave a review, give us feedback. And if you want to be a future guest on the show, like Jake was today, we'd love to have you. If you want to bring an idea, just reach out to us, and we'd love to have you. But until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Sound good?
Sounds great.
Okay. All right.